your relation to style is. So,
Yeah. Well,
like,
talk about the suit. Cassie has a clothing line based in Vancouver called Old Fashioned Standards. I wear a lot of clothes. It's all sort of elevated, upscale, but not even upscale, just like beautifully tailored, impeccably
Well
made
put to,
workwear, not trendy, but never out of style, you know? And for me, that's
timeless.
like timeless, right? Like, she doesn't succumb to trend, you know, but it's always exactly the right thing to be wearing. She's also an extraordinarily wonderful human.
Love.
And I'd been, I would save my pennies to buy her jeans and her suits because I love a suit. Like, I love a matchy matchy. Like, maybe that's left over from like church, like Black Pentecostal and Baptist church. I'm like, I love a matchy. I love a matching set. But I was went to her and I was like, Cassie, I need a suit and I think you need to make it. And I want it to be waxed cotton, which is like another conversation about Dutch and Dutch, the Dutch and black, and we'll talk about those.
And all the
That's
yeah,
another
trust.
thing, you and me,
I
another
feel
day.
like you're gonna be back or something. I feel
Ah,
like I swear to you. Anywho.
so there was something about like the shoulders. I was like, I need the shoulders to be like, we need to be calling to Prince and to Bowie. And there needs like I need to be able to move in it, but it also has to be workwear because this is work. Like just not just dance is work, but I think there's a lot more work we have to do to live than other folks do, and things have to
Of
be,
course.
and it has to be durable, but it also has to be beautiful and chic. And then I said, I also have this like flash dance reference I want in. I want just to have the cuffs of the shirt. I don't want sleeves. I just want the
Oh yeah.
cuffs.
Yes,
And
yes.
so she built me this beautiful suit, which is waxed cotton. And of course, the thing that I didn't think of is that that doesn't breathe. So
I don't mean to
it is
giggle,
hot
but
as a you know what in that suit. So I had to choreograph at some point taking off the jacket because it's like rivulets of water, like my socks at
You're
the
in a
top.
pool of
Yeah, I'm in a pool of my own sweat. But we built this. Yeah, it's just perfect. And I just think because I come from a family, I consider my family all dandies. In its many expressions, right? Like I
Of
think
course.
my kid's a full sweatsuit dandy.
Yes.
Like this person in my child has the best style. But it's
Love.
always track like it's sweatsuits always of some sort, you know. But the hat just right and the
Love it.
So my really
Coordination.
yeah, coordination. But like fashion is my like I never understood until I really started researching this work, like why fashion. Like it is my only hobby. People are like, oh, I hike and I do this and I do that. I'm like, I dance and I do fashion. That's
I
it.
know you fashion. Yes, I love.
Or I do art and art thinking and fashion. And my
I
mother
love.
was a hardcore fashionista when I was growing up. She never looked like the other moms. Sometimes I was embarrassed about it. Sweetheart, I'm still in my thing. Can I go back? Thank you. Sorry.
worries.
Yeah, so I grew up with a mom that would wear like a big to the floor, like dusting along the floor, black leather duster and a pillbox hat with her hair. I mean, I don't have the same hair as my mom, but like she would have all these like braids with bones, but and I loved it at home and sometimes would be embarrassed because we grew up in white neighborhoods, like
Of
a weird
course.
zip. And then like she would have like suede matching outfits. She had those Reebok 5411s, the ones with the Velcro at the
Oh,
top. I wear a
yes.
pair for the show. She had them in three colors, and
Wow.
sometimes she'd wear the red one on the left foot and a purple one on the right foot. Like my
Okay.
mom is like and
Top
I think
tier.
that top
Top
tier.
tier.
Yeah, so and then even but my grandmother too and mother dear, that's my great grandmother, we had to call her mother dear. She was a seamstress. I mean, at my sister's wedding, mother dear wore a long to the floor yellow feathered dress with a yellow feathered hat. Like talk about pulling focus, right? Like
She
so
said, I'm here.
she always said I'm here. So I think that for me, yeah, I have an enormous wardrobe. It could be bigger if I had the room. There's a play date happening at my house right now, and the child comes over, and I was like, there's no room in the coat closet for anything but my coats.
Just putting it out there, just letting you know.
I was like, but you can put it on the chair. But I think, like, just like the space that there is in the electric slide to express oneself. That's what fashion does. And I think the dandy is an audacious figure. I think the
Absolutely.
dandy, I think we, that the dandy takes, again, you take, just like they took those European line dances and made them something amazing. And we can just talk about how that has continued through time and continues to, TikTok is evidence that
100%.
we keep taking black dances and then we have to take them
Repackaging
back and
it
do
and
something
yeah,
else, you know?
100%.
And same with, the dandy wears the three-piece suit because it's acceptable, but there's always a turn, right? There's always a turn on the suit. Whether it's like, I mean, I think about Fresh Prince, when
Yes.
he wore his jacket inside
I
out because the
remember
lining
Inside
was more
Out.
free. Yeah.
Yes.
So like
Yes.
these types of things are like a patterned sock or a cufflink. I mean, I'm wearing a cufflink around my neck right now. So like
Love.
a cufflink that's like just so that the
Yes.
closer you go, the more layers, right? And there's a kind
Yes.
of an imaginative world inside the wearing of the coat. I mean, often my underwear matches the outside of my clothes. No one will know but me, but I know.
Nobody will know, but you know.
I
You know.
think there's that, and I thought, oh, this is another way to self-determine, to assert presence, and to be asked to be more than what we've been told we are, because we know better. Like,
Facts.
we know better. That's it.
Period. Period. We do. We really do. Okay, so I can't believe that we're winding down, because I know I could talk with you forever.
Yes, please.
But before I plug the show again, I do want to ask you, if you could share a little bit about maybe what's next for you. Like, if there's anything that you might have, that you are brewing, it's got brewing for you.
I mean, I tour the show a little bit more. Goes
Okay.
to Edmonton
Oh,
in
right on. Detail.
April with Mile Zero Dance Society, Jerry Marita, whom I love. And then we're going to the Fierce Festival in Birmingham in the UK, which is a festival I've wanted to
Okay.
be in for like 10 years. So it's a little bit of a dream moment. Thank
Congratulations. That's
you.
awesome.
I have an exhibition that opens at the Ore Gallery in September, where
Okay.
I'm showing an installation of another dance work I made, which is around Gestures of Resistance, a duet that I made with my friend Laura Young, and then I made it into a film, a video installation. So that's in Vancouver. You can check that out. It's also going to be in Kamloops this spring.
Awesome.
And then, like, maybe I'm in the beginning of starting to think about another work because I've been with this. I call it the Heirloom Suite, even though I don't even like that name, but that's what I call it. I've been in this since 2018, like looking at these line dances and dandyism and all of this. And so I feel like maybe it's time for the next thing. And I'm not always entire. I think there has something to do with clothing again, but maybe in a different kind of way. But I'm not sure because I just haven't had enough time and space to
Time to,
think
I
yet,
know, I feel you. I'm like, and as you know, I think that what we share is in a similarity is like things change all the time. You know what I mean? Like, and I am
Yes.
always open to go to the next thing. You know what I mean? Like, I don't resist it.
Same.
That's probably the thing, right? So I love that for you. I do want to before I plug again, guys, because I am going to give you information about the show. It will be in the show notes and all the things, but I would love for you to share, like, how could people connect with you online?
I have a, I don't know if my Instagram is public or private, but it's like Justine A. Chambers is always the handle I use,
Okay, awesome.
justine.a.chambers. But my website, my very lousy website, because
It's
it's
not
very
lousy, guys.
lousy. It's basically a blog made fancy, because I
It's
don't know.
cute.
It's just like it's like a list, but that's justineachambers.com, all one long word. You can always reach out to me at the university because I believe that email is public out in the world somewhere if you look up
Absolutely.
assistant professor. I'm super, I love a conversation. I think that's how I think. I'm not alone in a room and things like don't hatch like Athena out of Zeus's head for me. It's
Right.
always in conversation. So if these things resonate with you, let's talk about
Connect.
it.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Okay, so the brutal joy, which channels the overwhelming beauty of Black living, is taking place at PUSH International Performing Arts Festival on February 5th and 6th at the Scotia Dance Center. I am going to include information about this show in the notes, including like a link to purchase tickets, all of the things. Justine, I want to thank you for hanging out with me.
Oh my God, Nicole, thank you. This was, I'm so energized now.
Right?
I'm so energized. Thank you for, and also like, thank you for just for already knowing this stuff. It's very different to
Yeah.
talk to someone who just knows, and I'm really grateful for
I know,
that.
right? I
Yes.
know, because it's not that easy in the West
Not
sometimes.
that easy in the West
That's
sometimes.
all
Yeah.
I gotta say. So,
Same.
well, again, so much love and blessings to you. And I am
You.
looking forward to coming out to the show, Trust and Believe, because I was already excited. That's the reason why I connected as well. But also hearing it from you, you know what I mean? And hearing you talk about it, especially like how sound and light also connect with dance, you
Yeah,
know?
they are also the main characters.
Right? So
Yeah.
I'm here for it. All right. So thank you again.
My pleasure,
And
truly.
I want to thank everyone for listening.
Thanks, everyone, for hanging out with us.
Yes.
This is Bird Note. Do you ever see flocks of birds in your yard that show up in droves one year but are completely absent the next? Take this flock of pine siskins swarming around a thistle feeder, their wings briefly flashing yellow as they flit about. Rather than adopting the common north and south itinerary you might associate with migrating songbirds, these siskins take a more nomadic approach. Their movements depend on the availability of food and habitat. It's called eruptive migration. In years when conifer seeds are scarce in the boreal forests of Canada, pine siskins might hang around in lower latitudes, say Southern California or Tennessee. The location and timing of these eruptions change from year to year. And sometimes, by chance, gigantic flocks of pine siskins get funneled into the same regions, leading to backyards full of siskins. While these flocks are a delight for bird watchers, the dense groups of siskins can easily transmit diseases such as salmonellosis to each other and to other birds. It's a good reminder to keep bird feeders clean for our feathered visitors that can't always social distance when diseases spread. For Bird Note, I'm Ariana Rimmel. This episode is brought to you by Wild Delight Bird Food, which aims to support wild bird populations with clean, nutritious ingredients in every blend. Available at Chewy.com.
Something curious, something cultural, something unserious, sometimes serious, something mundane, something everyday, though not even really that. Tune into Typically Tuesdays, airing every Monday. You heard that right, Monday. From 3 to 4 p.m. Your hour of quasi-cerebral talk and tunes.
All right, now time for Peter R.H. What are you talking about today, Peter?
Well, on the last Wednesday, the TSSU, that is the union for the teachers' aides, what do you call them? TAs.
Yeah, TAs. I think it's the Teaching Support Staff Union.
And they also do a few other things, I think, as a union around.
Yeah, they do. I mean, obviously, they do a lot of advocacy and information, you know, sharing about the issues that are important to them.
So they did a movie night, and it was The Salt of the Earth. This is not the, which I haven't seen that documentary from 2014, but there's a 1954 film that actually, when I saw it, I knew there would have to be a bit of a background because this did not come from a major studio.
Right.
And it's about a, it was actually based on a true story.
Yeah.
And the people, most, a lot of the actors were not really actors, but they're people involved with the union event.
Right.
So it takes place in New Mexico.
But and it's like a, it's not a documentary, it's a story.
No, it's not a documentary.
Yeah.
It's a dramatization.
Right.
But it's done by the people that almost all that live through the experience.
Right.
And so it was a successful strike of a copper mine. And I think it was the same location that it happened at, and people were dying in it.
Yeah.
And it was like there were they were citizens of the United States, but they were of Mexican ancestry,
mm-hmm.
and they were not treated accordingly. In fact, was there a union? They had a representation, representative yeah. person who was a Caucasian, yeah. which he's. I think the person that was their union person was part of the film.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the producer and director were part of the a blacklist, and this is an independent production.
Yeah.
It may have been made by Marxists, but I'm going to have a kind of a critique. Do you remember Pauline Kael?
Mm-hmm.
She was
very, very famous film reviewer.
And she was actually, I didn't know, prior to the New Yorker, she was in the 1950s. She reviewed for Sight and Sound, which was sort of a very prestigious
mm-hmm.
kind yeah. of cinema thing. I think it's still around. She gave a negative review to the film.
Right.
Now, I found that I was a bit kind of surprised at that, because he's sort of seen in progressive ways, right?
Mm-hmm.
And what she said of the film, I'll get later on about it wasn't seen a lot in the United States at the time. Okay, but she panned it. And she called it... she called it a simplistic left-wing morality play, and said it was as clear a piece of communist propaganda as we have seen in many years.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I was a bit surprised because, you know, I was expecting to see the film. I was on Wednesday. I was expecting to see maybe that documentary, which I didn't know much about. Still don't.
Mm-hmm.
But... I had to sort of disagree with that review, and I'm surprised that she gave it that, even at the time. Now
that would have been around the same time, though, as the Red Scare. The Red Scare, was it not? With McCarthy.
However, she's a progressive.
True, but I wonder how much that sort of influenced her opinion, that being working in that environment and, you know... Did people
yes.
feel a need, and did it sort of create a sort of feel a need to sort of denounce things?
Well, she's yeah. supposedly above all those things, isn't
you'd hope,
she?
You'd think so, but, you know, yeah. Anyway, go on.
She was born 1919. She was yeah. in her mid-30s.
Yeah.
Now, so I was sort of, but I thought that was a bit, anyway, so The Grapes of Wrath, you heard of that film?
Yes.
1940. Actually, it was done just about 3 years after the novel came out
mm-hmm.
by Steinbeck. And this yeah. is what she said of it.
Yeah.
And actually, supposedly in the 60s, there were some other reviewers that were kind of critical of the film. So she called John Ford, who was the director,
yeah.
Dismissing it as a phony, hokey-okey epic filled with artificial sentimentality rather than a profound social statement. Contrary to its reputation as a masterpiece, Kael, a Californian, viewed it as a... No, they mentioned it. Yeah. As a flawed melodrama and pseudo-documentary that exploited the poor. Well, I don't agree with that one either as mm-hmm. such. One thing I think that kind of impresses me about The Grapes of Wrath that was done by a major studio, 20th Century Fox, is that it sort of showed that there was at least some commercial films that were critical of what was going on in the United yeah. States. It also says how, I mean, you. One thing that I don't like about Cuba is that they tell you can't move freely on the island.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of my criticisms, I feel, when I, you know, I'm not the biggest Castro lover or Cuba lover.
Yeah.
What happened in the 30s was that there were these people that lost their farms because of the Dust Bowl, and they were really not they were kind of said, don't cross the California state line.
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of the film. No, I really don't see any criticism of the film myself. I don't know if you've seen it.
Yes, I have. And I've read the book as well. And they're both.
Oh, you read the book.
Yeah, I think they're both terrific.
And, by the way, Magnus, I haven't read the book, but someone told me, is there a passage about a daughter breastfeeding her grandfather in that? Do you remember that?
I don't remember that off
okay,
the top
maybe
of my head.
That was some. No, but I thought it was in the movie. No, but I thought there was such a desperation. Actually, yeah.
And one of the things that they both do is they show very graphically the desperation of the people who, you know, they had, you know, it was a dust bowl. Their farms were blowing away on the wind. And then, you know, what it really shows you, they head out to California hoping for better. And then, of course, people in California don't want them there and treat them really, really badly. And it's really kind of shown, you know, with local police and even, you know, sort of gangs of citizens showing up at the camps where they had to set up. Anyway, let's get back to Salt of the Earth, though. What did you think of it? You watched it the other night.
Yes. I thought it transcended your typical Marxism. I'm going to sort of compare it to Battleship Potemkin,
yeah,
which is praise to the skies.
Right.
And
also a film of great importance in film history.
Yes.
Apart from its message, I think it's also important as for its storytelling and also its visuals and stuff.
Well,
it's got that famous Potemkin step scene where you see the soldiers walking down in a line, walking down the steps. Anyway, carry on.
But the thing is, they say if acting shows, it's bad acting. I think if editing shows, it's bad editing.
Yeah.
Of the woman with the broken glasses, I know it's seen as the greatest editing of all time, and I'm sorry. And the other thing that I don't like about Battleship Potemkin, I just get this heavy, oppressive ideology throughout the film. And this is why I think Salt of the Earth was very different entirely. I thought it was a really... one thing that happened was that... so they're part of the 10... that were sort of blacklisted.
Mm-hmm.
And so that they get, but they, in fact, there's even a film done in 2000 with Jeff Goldblum, which is about the making of the film.
Right.
But, and I also saw some documentaries about the film itself, how it was made. So one instance was that they decided to get, as I said earlier on, they got the people doing the, who were involved with the strike to be involved with the film. And one thing that they took issue with, they said, well, you have this guy going to the bar every night. We kind of don't see the character as being that.
Yeah.
And so this character, we have one scene where he's in a bar.
Yeah.
But it's not like we don't get the idea he's going there every night. So they got actually input from the people but themselves about how this film was going to be done.
Yeah.
There was a Mexican actress who plays, I think, the wife.
Mm-hmm.
I think the husband is played by one of the people that were part of the strike. She was, she wasn't an American citizen, but she had come legally to make the film, and then they did something that they said he had to be deported to go to Mexico. One of the other things that happened with the film is that the projectionist union was convinced to not have the film shown.
Interesting.
Or they would not be showing it.
Right.
In fact, the United States government, I think, tried to get the film not shown outside of the United States, too. But this was actually a rare case. And so it wasn't quite illegal for the film to be shown, but it was definitely tampered with.
Mm-hmm.
Now, King in New York, which was the last starring Chaplin film, was not seen in the United States till 1973. However, he kind of chose. It was 1957. He made the film.
Yeah,
and it was shown in Britain and so on. Outside the United States, or in 1957. But he was a bit misleading. He kind of chose not to show the United States. He was sort of implying it was banned. Yep. But having seen, because actually I checked on it a number of years ago, because I found out, oh, it wasn't really banned.
Yep.
So, and then I said, well, there was really no film ever banned in the United States, but this comes close to it because they do a lot of these circumstantial things that made it next to impossible to see it. So it's in the public domain now. Public domain is any film done 1930 and prior to that.
Yeah.
This was because of, and there's other films for other reasons that become part of the public domain because they have failed to...
Yeah, like It's a Wonderful Life was like that for a long time. Somehow they had not done something to renew the copyright, which is why it was on TV like all the time back in the day, because stations could just play it and they didn't have to pay any royalties.
And that, now it's NBC owns it, I think.
Yeah, they did some sort of restoration that gave them some renewal. Anyway, yeah.
So this one, I could understand why, because there was a bit of a kerfuffle over the film.
Yeah.
So that's in the public domain, and very easy to see at this point.
So to sort of finish up here, would you recommend people search it out?
Oh, definitely. I would definitely. I kind of don't like one thing that really got me. I saw a bit of the Jeff Goldblum film, and one thing that kind of got me was that it's not amateur acting. It's because a lot of them had the emotions of the strike in them, even though they weren't professional actors. So it was really kind of. I think it's good. Performances or presentations of people, and was the Jeff Goldblum and sort of your back to the Hollywood kind of acting. One thing I'd like to finish off here is that there was this Italian murder case where someone was judged by how they acted, and she wasn't guilty of it.
Yeah.
And I saw something on The View, our competition, actually. That was before I was on here at CJSF. But they said that people act like in the movies, you know, and they don't.
Yeah.
And they said the worst culprit of all times is Friends. Like, Friends is, you know, the TV sitcom is the worst one, because everything, as far as their acting style, is very phony.
Right.
So this is the anti-Friends, this movie. And I think you won't see it. I don't see it as an amateur film. I think it's well done and so on. So it's worth seeing.
Awesome. The Salt of the Earth, what year was it from?
1954.
And is it available on YouTube or whatever?
It's very easy to get. It's on YouTube, but if you put into the Google or into YouTube, put 1954, because there's a documentary I haven't seen. It's very easy to obtain and be able to see it.
Excellent. Well, thanks so much, Peter. Okay. And great. Peter will be back next week with something else to talk about, and we'll probably talk about whatever crazy stuff has gone on in the world from now until then.
I think we will.
Thank you. That's our show for today. Thanks to Peter for coming up and talking about The Salt of the Earth. Thanks to Nicole Hines for her interview with Justine Chambers. Remember, Justine Chambers will be returning to Vancouver with her show Brutal Joy in September. So keep your eye out for that and mark it on your calendar. Lots more great programming coming up here on CJSF today. Stay tuned for Democracy Now! Coming up in about 40 seconds. Up at noon is Wandering Rhythms. At 3 p.m., typically Tuesdays, and a whole lot more coming up later on today. I'm Magnus Tewald.
Hey, do you want to know about up-and-coming artists, albums, and more? Well, I have the perfect show for you. Come hang out with me at Raccoon City every Tuesday from 12 to 1. Hope to see you there.